From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Shot Tower Ghost by Mary Elizabeth Councilman. Most of us have nostalgic, so dear to my heart memories, tucked into the back of our minds, our subconscious minds to be coaxed out briefly now and then by some particular sound, some odor, some half-familiar sight. As for me, I cannot hear whippoorwill crying at night, but I go flying back through time and space to our old family home place in Wythe County, Virginia. The ferry is no longer there, replaced by a coldly efficient steel bridge that the state built. Cars and wagons, herds of sheep, and leisurely riders on horseback no longer pause at the bank of New River to call across, "Hello!" for the stocky, smiling ferryman to raft them over to where the road to Wytheville begins again. But on the east bank, the tall square fieldstone shot tower still broods over the green velvet countryside, a grim reminder of a day when Virginia was racked with civil war and brother turned against brother. Yes, the shot tower is still there, a historical landmark which my family at last turned over to the United Daughters of the Confederacy for the edification of the passing tourist. The spiral staircase that winds up and up inside the tower is new, not rotten and precarious as it was when I was there, one of the scattered cousins who came back home every summer for a visit. The sturdy, beamed floor of the single room, high up against the ceiling, used to be spattered with little hardened splashes of lead, spilled 85 years ago by determined rebels and loyal, sweating Negroes frantically making ammunition for Lee's troops. The leaden souvenirs are probably gone by now, and the square hole in the floor is fenced in by chicken wire, lest the unwary tourist fall through it into that dark, matching hole in the tower's dirt floor below. This leads, well-like, into the river. I'm not sure about the huge iron cauldron which caught the shot. Molten lead formed around rifle balls when it fell, hissing into cold water. The pot may yet be hanging down there into the river. Once, on a dare from another visiting cousin, I climbed halfway down the slimy ladder into that chill, murmuring darkness. But something slithered against my arm, and I never finished the adventure, especially as it was almost nightfall and time for the shot tower ghost to appear. Let me say here, to your probable disappointment, that there never was a shot tower ghost. This gruesome family specter was nothing more than a product of my great uncle Robert's imagination. He is dead now, a white-bearded, irascible old bachelor of the Haas Racing and Sired Game School. Dead, too, is Shadrach, his stooped and gray-haired body servant, last of the family slaves, who accepted their freedom with a bored sniff as the impractical notion of a parcel of poor white Yankees to the last day of their lives. About 2 weeks apart, Uncle Robert and Shadrach respectively remained unreconstructed and unfreed. And the fact that one of my aunts married a northerner, bore him a fine son, got rich, and came back to buy and remodel another old country place adjoining the home place was a great shock to both of them. I think they were convinced that Yankees are a roving tribe of gypsy marauders and incapable of fathering offspring. That son was my cousin Mark, who had none of the gracious charm of his mother's side of the family, and all of the butt-headed stubbornness of his Connecticut father. But in those days, just after World War I, the war in Europe, as Uncle Robert verbally shrugged off any of our conflicts, but the one between the states, I was a very young, fluttery miss with a terrible crush on France's ex-bushman, thence my cousin Mark, because he slightly resembled him. This particular summer, however, another cousin of mine from the Georgia branch was also visiting the home place, a red-headed minx named Adelia. She is fat, has 5 children now, may I add with vicious satisfaction. But she was 2 years older than I, and just entering the seminary, so Cousin Mark's eyes were all for her, not for a gawky high school sophomore from Birmingham, Alabama. Adelia was also popular with the younger set of Wyatteville. Almost every night, a squealing, laughing car full of young people would bear down on the ferryman, who had orders to ferry Miss Adelia's friends across free of charge. Uncle Robert and Shadrach would roll their eyes at each other and moan faintly, but a short while later my uncle would be grinning from ear to ear, seated in his favorite chair on the wide column veranda, with a bouquet of pretty girls clustered around him, begging for ghost stories. Shadrach, his eyeballs and teeth the only white thing about his grinning ebony face, would circulate around, offering syllabub and tiny beaten biscuits with baked ham between them, or calling rounds for an old-fashioned reel in the big living room where the Victrola played incessantly. Cousin Mark was a member of this coterie more often than anyone else, and Uncle Robert always made him welcome in a formally polite manner that Adelia, giggling beside me later in our big feather bed upstairs, would mock outrageously. Mark and Uncle Robert seemed to clash as naturally as a hound and a fox, for Mark had a rather rude way of finding holes in Uncle Robert's tall tales, mostly about the supernatural. "Did you ever actually see a ghost, sir?" Mark demanded once, sitting at ease on the front steps, against a backdrop of gray dusk and twinkling fireflies, and the distant plaintive crying of whippoorwills. "I have, sir," my uncle lashed back at him stiffly, "with my own 2 eyes, and if I may say so, I could pick off a Yankee sniper right now at 50 yards with a good rifle." "Unless he picked you off first," my cousin pointed out blandly. Then, with stubborn logic that seemed to infuriate my uncle, "When did you ever see a ghost, sir, may I ask?" he pursued, "and where? And how do you know it wasn't just an optical illusion?" "Sir," Uncle Robert drew himself up, sputtering slightly like an old firecracker, "sir, the Shot Tower ghost is no optical illusion. He is, and I give you my word on it, a true case of psychic phenomena. You understand?" Uncle slipped into his act, a very convincing one, in spite of Adelia's covert giggling. "You understand that after some very dramatic or tragic incident in which a person dies suddenly, they may be left what is called, I believe the American Society for Psychic Research calls it psychic residue, an emanation and an ectoplasmic replica of the person involved. This replica is sometimes left behind after death occurs, the death of the body, that is, for the circumstances under which the person died may have been so impossible to leave hanging. The ectoplasmic replica of that person lives on, repeating and repeating his last act, or trying to finish some task that he strongly wishes to finish." "Poppycock," my cousin interrupted flatly. "I don't believe there's any such thing as an ectoplasmic replica." "What a term," he laughed lightly. "Where'd you dig that one up, sir? At some table tapping seance, price $10 a spook?" "No, sir, I did not." Uncle Robert was bristling now. Adelia punched me and giggled. We could all see how very much he wanted to take this young Yankee-born whippersnapper down a peg or two. "I find the term used often. Uncle drawled, in Madame Blavatsky's four-volume work on the metaphysical. She was considered the foremost authority on the supernatural during the last century, the 19th century, when such notables as Arthur Conan Doyle were seriously studying the possibility of life after death. Blavatsky? Blavatsky? Mark murmured, then grinned and snapped his fingers. Oh, yes. I remember reading about her, something in the Golden Bow. Sir James Frazer says she's either the greatest authority or the biggest fraud in the history of metaphysical study. I read that once in the library at Tech, just browsing around. Uncle Robert choked. Most young people listened in wide-eyed awe to his erudite-sounding explanations of his tower ghost and certain other spook yarns that he cooked up for a naive pleasure. But Mark was tossing his high-sounding phrases right back at him with great relish and a covert wink at Adelia, who was perched on the arm of Uncle's chair. His smug air seemed to annoy her, though, for... Oh, the shot tower glass isn't any fraud, Adelia proclaimed tauntingly, with an affectionate pat for Uncle's gnarled old hand, at the moment gripping his cane as if he intended breaking it over Mark's head. I've seen it myself, she announced. Lib has too, haven't you, Lib? She demanded, and I nodded solemnly. Now you've seen it? Mark cheered, flipping a coin in the air and watching it glint softly in the mellow glow that slanted through the fanlight over the door. Anybody else? I've been hearing about this spook of Uncle Robert's ever since we moved here from Connecticut, but I've yet to catch a glimpse of him myself. A Confederate soldier with his legs cut off. How touching. Making shot for his comrades up to the day of Lee's surrender at Appomattox. And when the sad news comes, he throws himself off the tower into the river. Ha ha. Mark chuckled, suddenly fastening a cold, matter-of-fact young eye on Uncle Robert's face. Come on, Unc. Didn't you make that one up out of whole cloth? Sounds like something out of one of those old paperback dime novels I found in the attic. Capitola, the Madcap, or Love Conquers All. Young man, Uncle Robert stood up, abruptly quivering. I must ask you to mend your Yankee manners to your eldest, sir. Are you having the temerity to dispute my word, you young? At that moment, Shadrach took over gently but firmly. Throwing a light shawl around his master's shoulders, he maneuvered around beside him, preparing to help him to his feet. Master Robert, it's your bedtime, he pronounced. Come along now, Marsh Robert. Tell the young folks good night, 'cause I'm fixin' to help you up to your room. Shadrach, damn me, I'll take a horsewhip to this young man, my uncle roared petulantly, shrugging off the shawl and banging on the porch with his cane. Quit babying me, confound it. I'll go to bed when I please. Get away from me. Yes, sir, said Shadrach imperturbably. It's 11:30. Time you was asleep. Come on now, Master Robert. He tugged gently at my uncle's arm, finally wielding his heaviest weapon, the mention of my great-grandmother, Miss Beth, would like you setting up so late, catching your death or dampness. Oh, the devil, Uncle snapped at him peevishly. I'm coming. Soon as I tell these pretty young ladies good night, and take a cane to this young smart aleck. He glared at Cousin Mark, who grinned back at him lazily. It's not a wise thing, Uncle Robert intoned ominously, to joke about the supernatural regarded as a parlor game. And one of these days, young sir, you're going to find that out in a way you'll never forget. With that, and followed by a chorus of subdued giggles, he stamped into the house, leaving Adelia and me to bid our guests farewell. At the gate, after the car full of others had rolled away towards the ferry, Cousin Mark lingered, trying to persuade Adelia to kiss him goodnight. I would gladly have obliged, but my red-headed Georgia cousin switched away from him coolly, tossing her long auburn mop of curls. "No, I won't," she said shortly. The idea, poking fun at Uncle Robert right to his face. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Mark. And besides, you're such a smart aleck. Like Uncle said, how do you know there's no such thing as a ghost? Just because you happen never to have seen one?" Mark laughed softly, derisively. "And neither have you and Lib," he added. "I saw you wink at each other. Did you really think I'd swallow that silly yarn about the Confederate soldier?" Adelia nudged me all at once, a signal to stand by and back up whatever mischief she had in mind. "I've just remembered," she said quietly, "what tomorrow is. Lib, it was a year ago that we saw the soldier throw himself off that lookout porch at the top of the tower. Remember? You and I were riding horseback up the hill just at sundown, and you heard that awful scream, and we glanced up just in time to see that shadow falling from the tower into the river on July 9th, the date of Lee's surrender at Appomattox. It was April 9th, I hissed in her ear. You'll ruin everything. Shh, Adelia hissed back, giggling. Damn Yankee wouldn't know what day it was. Hardly the year. Oh, I'll never forget that sight, she whispered, shuddering. Not as long as I live. The look of despair on that man's face. The glimpse I got of it as he fell down, down. Bah, Mark cut her off with a retort. You're as big a liar as your Uncle Robert. He and his ridiculous ectoplasmic replica. But it's true, I chimed in solemnly. When we told about it, they dragged the river, but nobody was ever found, and none turned up at the falls downstream. He was wearing a shabby gray uniform and a gray forage cap, I elaborated, warming to our little hoax. And he wasn't more than 4 feet tall. His legs, you know, they'd been shot off by cannon fire. Adelia punched me again sharply. Don't overdo it, she hissed. Then with a grave, frightened look, turned on our cousin from Connecticut. Oh, Mark, you mustn't scoff at such things. Tomorrow is the date of the surrender. Maybe if you watch for him on the hill at sundown, you'll see him, too. Mark snorted again and strode towards the tethered horse he had ridden across the fields to Uncle's house earlier. In tan riding pants and sports shirt, open at the neck, he was the handsomest thing I had ever seen, barring, of course, Francis X himself. I sighed faintly as Adelia and I, arms about each other's waist, watched him mount and start to ride away, then wheel his spirited little bay back to face us. So tomorrow's the witching hour, huh? He laughed. Okay, I'll be here, with bells on. But let's make this worthwhile, cuz, he drawled tormentingly. How about a little bet of, say, $5? You pay me if our ghost doesn't show up. If I see him, I'll pay you. And gladly, he jeered. Adelia stiffened. I saw her pretty chin set, and her brown eyes flash. Take up the challenge Mark's cool blue eyes had thrown her. All right, Mr. Smart Aleck, she snapped back. It's a bet. Just be mighty sure you bring that $5. Just you have yours in your hand, Mark taunted. Want to make a little side bet, huh? A kiss, maybe? That kiss you won't give me tonight? That's a bet, too, Adelia answered briskly. That's how sure I am that there is a tower ghost, and that you'll see him tomorrow. Okay, Carrot Top, our cousin laughed. Remember, you're no southern gentleman if you don't pay up. He galloped away with that, and we strolled back towards the house together, Adelia and I listening to his lusty voice singing, out of sheer perversity, Sherman's Marching Through Georgia. Adelia stamped her foot. I hate that, she burst out unconvincingly. Lib, we've got to fix his wagon tomorrow. Her eyes began to twinkle all at once, and she ran up the curving staircase to burst into Uncle's room, where Shadrach was trying to make him drink his hot milk instead of another whiskey. Quickly, she related the bet to Uncle Robert, whose mild old eyes lighted up also with mischief. He slapped his knee, chuckling. "We'll fix him," he promised. "Shadrach, get me young Saunders on the phone. Bill Saunders' boy in Whiteville. He's a short enough to look." He tugged at his white beard, grinning. "Where's that old ratty Confederate uniform that belonged to your grand-uncle Claude, Lib? Indiatic, is it? Well, get it out. That Saunders boy won the high drive contest at VMI last year, didn't he?" "Yes." "Then jumping off that lookout porch on the tower and landing in the river won't be much of a feat for him." "Yeah." "Then he can swim underwater and come up inside the shot well. Hide under the cauldron until young Mark stops looking for him to come up." "Uncle Robert, you old faker, I knew you'd think of something," Adelia burst out laughing and hugged him. That went dancing around the high-ceilinged bedroom where four generations of our kin had been born, made love, had babies, and died. "I can't wait to see that smarty's face," she exulted. "I just can't wait." Shadrach, with his glass of hot milk, had been fidgeting around in the background, his wide eyes flitting from one of our faces to the other. Suddenly he blurted, "Mr. Robert, supposing there's a shot tower haunt up yonder. Seem like I recollect there was a little runty soldier what got one leg shot off at Murfreesboro, name of Jackson. And he did make shot up wonder in the tower. And he did jump off and get drowned." "I know that," Uncle Robert cut him short irritably. "Knew him personally. He was in my platoon. But he didn't jump. He..." "Yes, sir." "Got drunk and fell off from the lookout porch," the old man recalled uncomfortably. "But that wouldn't stop his spirit from coming back if he took a notion." "Oh, balderdash," Uncle Robert roared at him. "There's no such thing as a spirit. Ghost, haunt, call it whatever you like. You know very well, I simply made up these yarns to amuse the young folks." "Yes, sir," Shadrach subsided meekly, but his eyes were large and troubled in his wrinkled face. Adelia and I giggled and whispered half the night about our practical joke on Cousin Mark. We gobbled our waffles and wild honey as early as Aunt Cornelia could cook them, and spent the rest of the morning on the phone. Everyone in our little crowd had to be told about Uncle Robert's hoax, and since most of them rather disliked Cousin Mark for his abrupt and opinionated manner, all were looking forward to seeing him taken down a peg. At noon, Bill Saunders turned up, a small freckled youth. He made two or three practice dives off the tower porch, disappearing from sight each time mysteriously and reappearing through the shot well, slime-covered and draped with cobwebs. "Splendid, splendid," Uncle Robert applauded, chuckling. "You're an excellent swimmer, my boy." "Well, Adelia," his old eyes twinkled as my cousin stood with her arms about his waist, watching the performance from the point below the tower where she and I were supposed to have seen the ghost a year ago. "It's perfect," she laughed. "Mark doesn't know you can swim underwater and come up inside the shot well. He'll be skeptical, of course, until our spook disappears into the river. Oh, when he goes back to Connecticut to visit his father's people, he'll certainly have a tale that will curl her hair." The day passed slowly under the weight of our young impatience. After dinner, our friends began to turn up, by twos and fours, laughing and whispering together, and winking at Uncle Robert, who was enjoying his little jest immensely. As the long Virginia twilight began to fall, Adelia and I and Fluffy Organdy proposed an innocent-looking game of croquet under the big leafy maples on the lawn. Fireflies were beginning to wink and dart among the hedges. The sun had gone down below the distant blue-gray mountains, but a queer flat light lingered in the sky, giving everything that look of a stereotypical picture. "Don't anybody dare to snicker and give us away," Adelia ordered. "I want Mark to think
This is just another evening of fun and dancing. Unrehearsed. I can't wait another minute, she giggled, consulting the tiny wristwatch Uncle Robert had given her as a graduation present. He's late. It'll be too dark in another half an hour for him to see Bill. But I've painted him all over with luminous paint. You don't suppose Mark's got cold feet and backed out on his bet? Not that hard-headed, stubborn Yankee, I scoffed. An earthquake wouldn't keep him from... See? I broke off triumphant. Here he comes now, over the North Hill. A solitary rider in white sports shirt and brown jodhpurs was indeed coming, half for leather, over the far hill that separated the home place from my aunt's remodeled home. The little bay mare Mark always rode took the hill at a hard gallop and plunged down the other side without slackening speed. A narrow creek with a fence rambling along its further bank divided the bottom land where the cows and horses grazed. As we watched, holding our breath, my cousin spurred them out recklessly to take that precarious jump, ignoring the wide-open gate further down. "Young idiot," Uncle Robert muttered. "Rides like a damn Yankee. No consideration for the hoss. Ha! He'll break his fool!" Even as he spoke the words, the little bay, sailing over creek and fence, caught a hoof on the top rail and fell head over heels. Her rider went sprawling and did not rise, even after the mare scrambled to her feet and went galloping back home through the open gate. Adelia and I gasped and started to run in that direction. But as we reached the orchard gate, we saw Cousin Mark striding towards us along the narrow path past the spring house. We waved, he waved back, and Adelia sniffed. "He's okay," she said almost resentfully. "Nothing could make a dent in that rhinoceros hide." But as he approached us, I saw that he looked very pale and dazed. There was a great dark gash across his forehead at the temple, and he limped slightly. With a twinge of remorse, we beckoned, ready to call off our little joke. But Mark shook his head mockingly and pointed to the shot tower, turning his steps in that direction before he reached the orchard. He shouted something, but wind must have blown the sound away from us, for we could hear nothing but the faint, quivering cry of a whippoorwill somewhere along the river. Adelia stamped her foot. "See," she exploded. "He's so smug, so sure of himself. Going to show us up for a bunch of superstitious nitwits. Just you wait." We ran back through the orchard to join the others, lined up along the fence to watch Mark. Through the gathering dusk, we could see his lone figure toiling up the hill toward the shot tower, its bleak silhouette picked out sharply against the pale pink and gold of the western sky. White sheep dotted the green hillside, but as Mark picked his way among them, they did not start and run, but went on grazing undisturbed. We began to laugh and chatter excitedly as my cousin reached the point where the ghosts could best be seen. Uncle Robert signals with a flashlight, and instantly a foreshortened figure, glowing with an eerie green radiance, appeared on the lookout porch. Laughing, we saw Mark stop short, staring up at the apparition. Uncle Robert signaled again. Promptly, a harsh, quavering cry broke the evening stillness, heartrending in its despair. The figure on the lookout porch in gray Confederate uniform and forage cap suddenly flung itself out into space. Screaming, it fell down, down to disappear in the whirling river far below. We saw Mark standing on the riverbank, watching intently for the swimmer to bob up. When he did not, my cousin turned uncertainly, looking up and downstream, while we watched, bent double with mirth at his obvious bewilderment. He turned at last and entered the door of the shot tower, evidently preparing to climb the spiral staircase and examine the lookout porch from which the specter had jumped. We fell upon one another, rocked with laughter. But abruptly, my cousin's figure reappeared and started limping down the hill. He reached the front gate and stood there, swaying slightly, very pale and disheveled, but smiling in mocking triumph. As Adelia opened the iron gate for him, questioningly trying to keep her face straight and solemn, Mark began to laugh silently and held out his hand palm up. At that instant, a second dripping figure in soggy gray uniform, and minus the forage cap, was seen slogging down the hill. Bill Saunders reached us and leaned on the fence, grinning disgustedly and coughed up a bit as if strangled. Most of the phosphorescent paint had washed off, and it glowed ludicrously, only on spot, Uncle Claude's faded uniform. "Bill!" Adelia wailed, half-laughing. "Oh, shoot! What went wrong? How did Mark find out?" "Aw." Saunders ducked his head sheepishly. "I did it perfectly twice before. But this time I had to swim up under the wrong side of the shock cauldron. Got strangled and near drowned. Would have if Mark hadn't heard me splashing around and caught me by the collar." All eyes turned on my cousin Mark then, standing there quietly in the gathering dusk, looking oddly weak and pale, but smiling with sardonic satisfaction. His hand was still held out mockingly, and Adelia flounced over to him disgruntled. "All right, General Grant," she lashed out peevishly, as Mark still did not speak. "Start rubbing it in, why don't you? You outflanked us. You won the bet, and I'm no welcher." Her brown eyes twinkled suddenly. "But I didn't say where you could kiss me. Just on the cheek." She turned her pretty face up to him, at the same time thrusting a crumpled bill into his hand. I gasped as I saw that it was a worthless piece of 1864 currency we had found in the attic, along with Uncle Claude's uniform. "And here's your five," Adelia jeered. "I didn't promise I wouldn't pay off in Confederate money." Mark smiled at her, a one-sided, ironic little smile of reluctant admiration. He shrugged and bent to kiss her on the cheek, but abruptly he swayed, an expression of pain and confusion crossing his handsome face, now only a white blur against the darkness. One hand groped for the money Adelia held out, the other went to the dark gash on his forehead, and I saw my pretty cousin's face soften with tenderness. "Oh, Mark," she cried out, "you were hurt when your horse threw you. Why didn't you tell us? Instead of going on with this silly bet, we..." Someone screamed, a rasping, high-pitched sound of utter terror. We all whirled towards the sound, startled. Shadrach, coming across the lawn gravely to find Uncle Robert, had halted abruptly. Shadrach's eyes were distended with horror, one hand pointing shakily in our direction. We laughed, thinking he had seen Bill Saunders' glowing figure, and followed him into the house as he ran from us, still shrieking. But he locked himself into his room, and no amount of coaxing would bring him out. In the hallway, we noticed the phone off the hook. Uncle Robert picked it up and was startled by the sound of sobbing coming over the wire. It was my aunt, a rather hysterical woman. Mark's horse, she said, had returned riderless to the stable. She was sure something had happened to him. Was he all right? Was he there with us? Uncle Robert soothed her, assured her that Mark was with us, quite uninjured, then called him to the phone to convince his mother. There was no answer, other than the eerie cry of a distant whippoorwill. Mark had vanished, left abruptly, after collecting Adelia, remarked in a correct tone of disappointment, only the money half of their little bet. "We'd phone and tease him about that when he reached home," she laughingly said. But an hour later, my aunt called back. Mark had not arrived. When she called again frantically around midnight, a search was instituted. Toward morning, they found his body. He was lying all crumpled up where his little bay mare had thrown him when he fell. A quick examination showed that his right leg had been broken in two places, but mercifully he had not had to lie there suffering all night. A blow on the temple when his head struck a rock had killed him instantly, the coroner said. Mark had been dead all that time. The coroner jeered at the fantastic account we told of his saving Bill Saunders' life, then collecting that bet from Adelia. A case of mass hypnotism, he called it, induced by the fact that we were all so anxious for Mark's presence to complete our little hoax about the Shot Tower ghost. He quoted the illusion of the Indian rope trick as an example how a group of people in broad daylight can be made to see a small boy climb a rope rising in midair and disappear before their very eyes. Psychic residue and ectoplasmic replica were terms he had never heard, nor did anyone ever hear of them again from Uncle Robert's lips. He and Shadrach were thereafter conspicuously silent, exchanging a long look whenever the supernatural was mentioned. And as for me, the cry of a whippoorwill at dusk still makes me shiver uncontrollably. For there was one little item that the coroner could not explain. There was a crumpled $5 bill in my cousin Mark's dead hand when they found him, a worthless piece of currency printed by the Southern Confederacy in 1864.